On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Corey Peterson to uncover the hidden costs of property management.
Hey, Mavericks. This is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them, with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps for you to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover the hidden costs of property management. For those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Now, before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point you like what you're hearing, well, give us a thumbs up and be sure to subscribe. Never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, give us a written review and be certain to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today we've got the privilege to learn from a person who's been in this industry for darn near 15 years and has done almost $250 million in transactions. Prior to his career in real estate, he was a used car salesman. Ultimately, it all changed in one trip to Hawaii where he met his first mentor. I would describe today's Maverick as someone who's passionate about protecting investors' interest and earning passive income. Today's Maverick, I've got Corey Peterson here. Corey, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, my friend.
Man, it's good to see you. Hey, for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Coon Investments, Corey Peterson, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Started from scratch. I'm like the Drake song. I started from the bottom and now I'm here. But own about $250 million worth of commercial real estate, raised over $95 million in private equity, and living my best life and loving it along the way.
Start to me at the very beginning of your commercial real estate journey. Tell me about the very first commercial property you bought.
Yeah, the first deal, and I'll back up too, because we got a really unique story. I'll back up just a smidget, right?
Yeah.
Is about the dream, right? I think as entrepreneurs, we all have this thing that really drives you. And for me, I didn't get the download from the mothership till I was 32. I used to be a used car salesman, but I went to Hawaii for the first time with my girlfriend, now my wife of 20 years. Yeah. And we go there and I met my first mentor. His name was Bruce. And I call him Bruce Wayne. Okay. He wasn't Batman, but he had a lot of money. And so we get there and I've never seen wealth like that because Bruce had the two things I think most of us desire, which is time and money. And he had them both. And so I'd never seen wealth like that. And so I asked him, I'm like, what do you do? And then he said the magic words. He said he was in real estate and that he owned apartments. So I left that island of Kauai thinking that Bruce was the big kahuna. And so, of course, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's the thing that flipped my switch. And I was like, dude, that's Bruce. Bruce, because Bruce was self-made as well. And so that's when I decided and made the decision that that's what I wanted to do. Long journey along the way, I got into wholesaling. Then I moved to fix and flip, right? And to do fix and flip, I eventually learned how to raise private money. So I got really good at raising equity. And then one day I drove past an apartment complex. And I used to say, I wish I could own an apartment complex. And on one day, it was just weirded because I drove by and I actually framed it different. I asked myself, how can I own an apartment complex? And from the moment I framed the question right, my brain went to work. I found a mentor in commercial real estate, went through all the painful lessons, and I got where I felt confident. And so I bought my first deal in 2011. I found a deal in South Carolina, 144 units, $3.2 million was the purchase price. Yeah. And I raised $1.4 million of private equity. And so that was my first real big raise. Of course, I got the money in right at the very end, right? The last day of my last $100,000 showed up by the hair of my skinny skin, you know, chin, chin, chin. But I closed. And then the real work happened because now you got to operate, right? You got to really operate these things. And we had a plan and some things went good. Some things went not so good and bad, but we persevered along the way and we held it for 5 years. And then I sold that property 5 years later for $8.8 million. Wow. So we made almost $5 million profit. And that one deal set me free. And that's really what catapulted me to own the real estate that we own now.
Tell me about the most recent deal you've done.
Our last deal that we did, talk about extremes, right? Where you start, where you go.
Yes.
We just closed a $40 million project. And this was a deal. It's a student housing project in Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, which is just north of Pittsburgh. 200 units, 500 or 623 beds. We rented by the bed in student housing. And that one we bought for $40 million and we raised almost $15.5 million in private equity for that project. And it's an amazing property. It's right now my jewel, right? So it has all the amenities. It's the newest property, I think 2010 built or something like that.
Okay.
So it's a beautiful property.
So let's fill it in. We've got the bread of the sandwich. Now let's fill me in the middle because there's a lot of meat in there in terms of all the lessons, all the things you had to learn along the way. Give me some of the highlights. What are the most challenging things? What have you learned? What's gone really, really well? What's been a struggle? And I know there's a lot of things to unpack here.
Yeah, no. So listen, we can go to the first one. I'll tell you exactly what happened on that when it went bad, right? Know thy partner, right? And know thy operating agreement. Those are the two things. Those are two lessons that I learned right in the, out of the gate. So when I had partners that found the deal and I came in and I was the equity piece, but they needed my money really bad. So I negotiated a 75% ownership of the deal. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to have 75% voting rights because I was bringing lots of capital and rescuing this project.
Right.
And so that's what we agreed upon. But somehow my attorney, I was still new, so I didn't probably have the right attorney, but he missed it. And I signed all the docs to the closing. You're just signing documents. They're all pre-done. You have no idea what you're signing. You just sign it. But I signed a paper saying that everybody had 33% voting rights, but I said 75% of the profit, but not the control. And the control is what I was really after. Well, that led into, I immediately called the guy, and I'm not proud of this moment, but I maybe said, I'm coming over to your house and hell's coming with me and I'm buying you out. So we come up with a price, it's a couple hundred thousand dollars. I didn't have the money, so I had to call another friend and be like, hey, I need a couple hundred thousand dollars and he gave it to me. But that led to the other guy suing me because he's like, oh, it doesn't say it in the operating, even though it did. But knowing the operating agreement, like truly the ins and outs. And I will tell you at this point in my life, I've learned that when you're doing these types of deals, you definitely really want to make sure that you're having I call it strong legal counsel. I wouldn't have anybody but my attorney draw up these contracts or these operating agreements if I'm partnered with anybody. Because if I don't partner unless I'm the lead, and if I'm the lead, we're using my attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a real hard lesson. And then more importantly, we get into the deal and there's drugs and there's an area we all know where it's at. And it was worse than we thought, right?
You're saying the project itself, the apartment itself. Yep.
There's someone that's dealing drugs on the property. We kind of have an idea where it's at. We don't know exactly. And you're trying to solve for this because that's a big distractor. All the residents know, but they're not going to narc because they don't want to get in trouble. They want no problems.
Right.
Yeah. So we're trying to solve the solution and it's taken a while. Finally, I was like, let's get the police department involved a little bit. So we gave a unit to one of the police department for free, almost pretty close to free. And so he's like, just start walking around the building. So then he actually found the location where it was at. Now we're more migrated to an area. And then one day we're just talking, and this is the beauty of really talking with people and just asking for help. And so I was like, listen, don't you guys have drug dogs? He's like, yeah. yeah, we got drug dogs. I go, do you guys ever want like a training facility to kind of run them? He's like, oh, we would love to do that. I was like, well, I'm offering my property. And so we put notices on all the doors that the Malden police were going to be running their dogs and as a whatever. And we had two move outs in the middle of the night. Drug problem solved, Neil. And it's funny because after that, like residents were coming into the office saying, thank you so much. Right. Thank you. They all knew, but they were not going to say anything. And from that moment, that's when our property really started to improve greatly. And it was just a beautiful thing. So, of course, there's also a lot of other things that can go wrong. But what I believe now, I think, is the most important part of this is I said I would never be a property manager. Like, I've always hired third-party providers to do property management, Neil. And I've always believed that that's the way you're supposed to do it. And I think when you're starting out, it's probably the way you should do it. Until you get to a point, what I call vertically integrate, which is what we did this year. And with the way the economy is going right now, Neil, it's crazy. Interest rates have doubled. And efficiency, being very efficient in your supply chain and how you're ordering products, how you're controlling your cost, this is the name of the game right now. I call it survive 25. You've got to make sure you're efficient, that you're a good operator.
You got to be lean.
You have to be lean and mean, right? And so when I'm looking at my third-party management companies, we don't share the same vision. They are a fee-based company, and they just love charging fees for everything. And they really don't care about the results. And so they'll spend your money very freely, Neil.
The incentives are not aligned between you and them.
Never.
In fact, right? In many cases, they're combative.
They are. They really are. And so what do you do to solve that? Well, in the beginning, you start micromanaging the people, the staff, right? Well, yeah, that's our staff. You can't talk to these people and give them orders because now I'm screwing up the chain of command. I'm really being more disruptive. And so we took a hard look and said, listen, does it make sense to vertically integrate, to take property management in-house? Mm-hmm. And I said I would never do it, Neil, but we just did it about 5 months ago. And I will say that it's probably the best thing that I've ever done. And the reason why, it's really not about, even though we have saved money, we've saved a lot of money, Neil, but I'm going to tell you that's not the most important reason for me. It's about, so people in life will make or break you, no matter what it is. When you start having complexity with your business, and you're mm-hmm. growing your business, that means you're adding people to it. And to any organization, the bigger the organization, look like Amazon, right? Amazon's huge. But they run really well because they have SOPs and processes, and they've had to develop very detailed processes for that amount of people. Okay. So same thing for our little company. And when you take over this, we had a concept of we were going to be best in class, and we wanted to create culture. And you would believe how many people. Now, if you look at our property managers, these are not highly compensated people, but they're running multi-million dollar assets.
Right.
And so why do they do it? Well, I believe you got to find something. You got to give them what they really desire, which is the recognition. A lot of these, 75% of our staff are women, right? They want recognition. They want to be seen and they want input. They have good ideas. And so we championed this idea and created our award-winning culture. And for us, that's been everything, Neil. It really is. These people, when you set them up right and give them a way to feedback and then use their own mind to get creative and help bring solutions to the table, you'd be amazed what they come up with. And
they're the boots on the ground. They're the ones seeing it, living whatever challenge or problem that does exist on the property. And oftentimes they're going to have better solutions than somebody a couple management rungs above.
Always. And then not only that, but then you're also talking about then we get them involved in P&L discussions, because that's never happened at a property management company where we're talking about the budget, the P&L, because it's never been something that they've ever really been a part of. And I see this more often than not. A lot of third-party management companies, the managers are not involved in the financials. And so that was our first step. It was like, guys, we got to get you involved in the financials. We got to treat this money like it was your.
Right.
And then we start bonusing them on that, right? On saving money, finding cost savings. And it's crazy. Like, you have two switches. For one's $7, one's $3, or in the same switch. And but now they're conscious of what they're buying. And they're like, do I need 5? Do I need 10? Are we going to use them a lot? Do I need to buy it in bulk? But they're asking themselves questions that before would never get answered, never get asked, right? That creates your supply chain efficiency that you're really looking for to get the most bang for the buck, which ultimately saves your asset lots of money and makes you look as a very good operator. And in today's times, that is what's needed, in my opinion.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Survive to 25. Expand upon that for the listener's sake. When you say that, what do you mean by that? In an environment standpoint, what has you even utilizing those words?
Yeah. So interest rates have went up. So we've got bridge loans that we are in and valuations, like it's not the time to sell, right? Even if we have projects that we're slated to sell, we're not selling them if we don't have to, because it's just not the time. And what's going to help is making sure that we're very efficient. For our bridge notes, we have like 4 bridge notes. We're getting rid of 2 next month and we have 2 more left. And in that, you've got to be able to get a refi, meaning you have to be profitable and you have to have enough equity in there in your numbers to justify the refi. Now, usually, luckily, we've been fortunate enough to do this. But again, we also believe that interest rates are not going to stay high forever. Historically, when we've had a huge increase, it'll eventually start to come down. So our goal is that's probably not next year. It's probably 25. It's probably 2 years from now. So in real estate, if you're patient and if our investors are patient, and we've learned and taught our investors, like, guys, we could sell this, but it wouldn't make a lot of sense for all of us. Yeah, we could get your money back and make a little bit of profit, or we can just be patient and let's go through the process and sell when it really makes sense or exit when it really makes sense. And I think when you put common sense to that, most of your investor pools, they understand this. You're like, yeah, you're right. Let's be prudent. Some of these investors, some investors really need their money, so I get it. But most of them, when we do it right, they're not in need of it right now. And they're willing to wait because they want the best return. And so I think that's communicating that with your investors is the most important, by the way, right? Having very open dialogue about what you're doing and what you're seeing. I think that's what they desire the most is clear, clean. And I always say there's not good news or bad news, Neil. It's just the news. Give it to me straight. Most investors want it straight.
Talk to me about your communication plan. And I've seen this a lot, wide variance of people. We don't communicate a lot. We communicate very frequently and everything you can imagine in between. And communication, certainly to investors, is critical. And you've obviously had wild success connecting with and raising money and getting investors to believe in you and what it is that you do. How do you guys handle your communication plan?
So we typically will send out once a month a very detailed financial. So like we give our investors a financial dashboard or packet that's about 200 pages long. It includes bank accounts, reconciliation of those. Like we give them full disclosure, more than we should ever. Accounts receivable, accounts payable. We give them everything, right? So, and then we also give, then we roll up a synopsis of what happened. We call it following, managing the P's, profit, product, plant, all the different things. And we give them with here's what's going on in each section, right? So that happens once a month. But then when you're not operating efficiently or things are wrong, then it is, hey, I'm on the site. You got to show people that you're there. Like videos, we do a lot of video communications. People like, some people don't want to read it all. They just want a quick video. Give me a video. What's going on? And so we do that as often as needed and as often as it merits. And usually on properties that are having issues that are not paying, right? So we've got some properties that are not paying right now. And we try to get that way more frequently as we're making decisions or like we're solving problems or really because these properties are like big Titanics. They don't just turn real nimble. You have to see these things and we got to guide the ship and it takes a minute to get everything fixed. And so, but we can make course corrections. And that's the beautiful thing that I love about real estate, that the financial world I used to be a financial advisor. So I know I was a used car salesman, but I used to be a financial advisor. And I was one when 2008 and 9 happened, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And at that moment, I realized there was no levers. When the market goes down and it goes down 50%, everybody's like, what do we do? Nothing, right? And there's no levers to pull. Right. With real estate, this is the wonderful thing I love about this asset class, is that we have things that we can still do. We can be more efficient. We can let go excess staff. We can work on our supply chain, our ordering, be very nimble, only order the things we really need. And all that stuff are things you can do to get through COVID mm-hmm. and through now we have an interest. Like we've had a 1-2 punch, right? Now, COVID was good for most people, for most properties.
Correct.
Unless you're in student housing, which Corey Peterson is in 70%. So I've had like a 1-2 punch. But I also believe in buy when there's blood in the street. So we were in some student housing and we doubled our efforts in student when COVID hit because we're like, this is the time to buy. There's a lot of people that need to sell and we can pick up opportunities. And so we picked up quite a few properties in the student housing sector.
How did student housing perform differently than apartments during COVID and post COVID?
Yeah. So during COVID, it was ghost town, right? So the properties that we had that now these are smaller schools. Now D1 schools are different, right? So I'm usually buying D2 schools. And so those we had one that was 100% 3 years in a row and went to 45.
You're saying both in occupancy, economic and physical?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it went from 100% occupancy to 45% occupancy mm-hmm. overnight because of COVID. The following year, 47, this year to 79, and then we're back to 90%, 95, right? So it's rebounded, but it took some time to get there. Now, and then the stuff that we bought in COVID, we bought bigger schools. So we understood like, okay, we made some mistakes buying smaller schools. Let's buy the bigger schools. So they weren't as affected as much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's turned out to be a really good blessing where now we are benefiting so well. And the only thing that would affect student housing is COVID. The market, the economy doesn't really affect it as much, right? So now we're going into a slowdown in the market. But guess what? During economic downturns, yeah. usually when enrollment in college goes up.
Goes up.
Right? Yes. So we're getting the opposite of it. So our properties are full. We're getting rate increases. And in the right locations in the bigger schools, they fill up no matter what. Because when your kid, like my son is getting ready to turn 18, he's going to college. Guess what? I don't wait a year. I send them to college, right?
Yeah.
And that's how most everybody else does it too. When you're, my daughter was a sophomore in college right now. When she turned college age, she went to college.
Right.
And dad paid.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So then that's the part that I do love about the student housing side of it is mom and dad co-sign for their kid. So we all know that college kids are not the easiest on stuff. Like they holes in walls, they break stuff.
Yep.
But guess what? Mom and dad pay because they're not going to ruin their 720, 750 credit score
right.
for little Johnny that put a hole in a wall.
Wow. Amazing. When you were buying during the COVID era, did the red state, blue state make a difference in where you placed investments?
A little bit of yes and no, right? So it's always market specific. So we bought in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. right? That would be typically a blue state,
correct?
Right? Maybe it's a purple state. I don't know, but like... Right. The economics made sense, so we didn't really care as much. And I try not to get too attached to that outcome as much as I look for the deal. And the deal made a lot of sense, and it had historical history. So I was okay with that risk profile.
I'll further that question. So as opposed to apartments, where perhaps red and blue was in apartments versus student housing, you may have had a more profound effect given the eviction moratorium. Inside yeah. many blue states.
Yes. Well,
I guess that same setup.
Same laws work for us, but yeah. usually it's different because it's a college experience.
It's a college experience. And therefore you're not experiencing the same eviction type thing or the moratorium really wasn't that applicable in the student housing versus apartments inside any color state. Fair to say?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because like you have a lease up for a student yeah. and it's like in August, at the end of August, you get what you get and you keep it for the whole year. Right. And then everybody moves out
yep.
at once and they move back in.
You have to have amazing tight turn times.
3 weeks.
3 weeks to churn all the units. And yes. there's damage in all of them.
yeah. We get into them early though. So like they move out and we have a 3-week period to really do it. But with the way we do it, we're way aggressive. We start like kids start trickling out to you. Like, school's over and their lease is for 12 months. School's for 9. So when they start to go out or they leave, or the other part is the renewals. So if they renew their lease, then we're not turning the unit. Mm-hmm. So we try to get as many renewals as possible for every unit, every door, because then we don't have to turn it as much, right? Because like, hey, it's already shared living. We're not turning this one because it's a renewal.
Yep.
And they get it. So we turn the bedrooms, right? The bedrooms are easy to clean, but we're not worried about the common areas.
Yeah.
And so it is a massive, but we still have flooring, paint, drywall, all those contractors come in mass force and we get stuff done.
You could have picked any asset class. Why multifamily and student housing?
I got involved in student by accident, right? But I found out that I love the class, right? I just had a broker give me a deal. He's like, hey, you think you want to do this one? And I went to my management company and I was like, can we do this? I don't know anything about student. And we made some mistakes along the way, but I was like, dude, this is a good asset class. I like it.
Yeah.
Of course, then COVID hit me 3 years later. So I was like, oh, God, if I have anything that could go wrong, that was a big one. But we didn't lose anything during COVID, right? And honestly, those were some very tight, lean years for some of those properties. But for the most part, I love the asset class. It's very resilient. It bounced back quickly. And now it's strong. It's stronger than ever. And very, very proud of that asset class.
What are you most excited about for the rest of the year?
Man, I'm excited about going and shopping, right? Like, listen, I've been waiting. Yeah. We've not done any deals this year. No new deals as of today. We're actually getting ready to maybe put one under contract. And so I'm just excited that we're back to doing the fundamentals. And I think there's lots of opportunity coming.
Yep.
So we've been just getting our capital stacks ready, talking to the investors saying, you know, we've not done anything in a while. There's a reason for it. We feel like the tide's turning. We've finally maybe reached a plateau with the interest rate hikes with the Fed. If we can start buying and as the Fed starts to maybe go the other way, there's lots of opportunity there for us to make a lot of money.
Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four.
Yeah.
What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that happens to be?
I think it's not having the right amount of syndicators to vet, right? Mm. I feel like if they had more choices and understanding that they should do a little bit more due diligence and kick the tires a little bit and ask better questions to their investor, to their potential GPs, because to me, that's if they can kick the tires and know the questions to ask or at least be willing to do some more due diligence, they'll get, because knowledge is power, and spend more time vetting that process.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Being a dad, right? My biggest thing that I've done in the world and that's right is I've been a full-time dad through all of this. I've coached my kids soccer. I've been involved in football, all of it. I've never stopped being a full-time. All the things I wanted to do that my dad did for me, I was able to do it all through real estate, even though I'm busy. But I control my calendar and I control when I work and when I don't.
Your favorite book?
The Richest Man of Babylon, right? A tenth of everything I make is mine to keep. Mm-hmm. More people need to understand that principle and do it.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I believe the philanthropy. So I'm in a group called the Chandler Compadres. We raised $2 million for our local Boys and Girls Club, and we have to do the work. We just can't go write checks. You have to volunteer. I made Rookie of the Year this year.
Nice.
So I was very proud of that. And you got to give back to your community. Find something that you're passionate about and do it. And it's funny, a lot of those guys give me money, but I didn't go there to get money. I go there because I love the charity. I love what it stood for. And then you just surround yourself with people that are more like you. They're all business owners. They're all committed to that thing of doing good for kids and giving back. It's very intoxicating. It's a lot of fun along the way.
No, that's great. Corey, you've got a wonderful story. It's a great conversation. For people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. Where can they go? What should they do?
Yeah, they can go to kahunainvestments.com, follow us there. I'm happy to give away my book.
Wonderful.
I've got a book called Copy Your Way to Success, Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. I always say I was never that smart, but I was a really good copier in school, right? Which has been my superpower.
Yeah.
But you can get that by texting the word book to 480-500-1127. Yeah, so just text the word book to 480-500-1127. We'll send you a copy for free.
Wonderful. Very generous. Thanks, Corey. The wonderful conversation. It's been great to connect with you again. See you here soon.
Thank you.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.